Mostly what I'm going to be talking about is at least for the first couple days, all this time and part of next time, is just thinking, the process, the art and science of thinking. And if you have questions, or encourage questions, one of the things I learned, I have degrees in physics and engineering, and one of the when I was at the University of Wyoming, they taught kind of in a spiral fashion. You'd get some new stuff, incorporate it into old stuff, get some new stuff, incorporate it, and just kind of moving forward that way. And I really like that. So all the way through here, I'm going to be introducing new things, new ideas, maybe new to you, I don't know, we'll see. And then I'm going to build them in and incorporate. And so when we go out into the world, if you're watching the news or a politician or a preacher or anybody is kind of putting stuff out there, you will have a way that it's like the ultimate in critical thinking. A lot of critical thinking today is just to be critical, to be skeptical in a way that doesn't lead to answers. And so real critical thinking is evaluating, this is good, that's not, and how to synthesize ultimately to come to valuable conclusions. Skepticism, I think cynicism is almost useless as far as developing knowledge, especially valuable knowledge, useful knowledge, things that, and we're, as we're kind of watching things unfold around the world, we're in a lot of trouble. And in my opinion, learning to think about things and bringing real answers. And I'll say, I am a Christian, I'll say that up front. And it's the title, is that the old, Jesus was never stumped for an answer, ever. And of course it helps when you know everything about everything and how things are supposed to be and that kind of stuff. But he still gave us an example. And in the end of 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 16, it says that we have the mind of Christ. We have that kingdom knowledge available to us. And that's part of our job here, is to bring real answers to problems that are going on around us individually and globally. We have that task. I put a lot of this in a book. It's called Threefold Core. You get it at Amazon, or you can go to criticalmass.pro is my website. Critical mass comes out of atomic theory, and it says you don't need a lot, you just need enough. Jesus started with 12 and changed the world. And so to continue with that, so I call my website Critical Mass, because in looking at movements through history, just a few percent of the population controlled the other 97 or 98%. In the Soviet Union, only 3% of the entire population were communists. It's card-carrying communists. But they managed to influence a fear and intimidation over the whole rest of the population. And it's been that way all through history. There was a time in the Roman Empire when they suggested that we should give all of the slaves uniforms so we know who they are. And they started looking around and they decided that's not a good idea, because there's more slaves than there are citizens. And if all the slaves realized how many of them there were, they might start not wanting to be slaves anymore. And so they just canceled the whole idea. And it's been that way through history, that a small number of people, for better and for worse, have changed the world. So this is my humble attempt to get started. Most of what's going to come from here is going to come from the apologetics chapter. And it's just about thinking. About learning to think through stuff. Not becoming emotionally deeply derailed because something doesn't seem right. We can have a little more
word cord is like connections.
Yes.
They're all tied together.
That comes out of Ecclesiastes, that a threefold cord is not easily broken. Mm-hmm. A three-stranded rope, essentially. So I'm kind of using this as the overall sort of logo for the class. And this is the first thing that I want to talk about. What does this mean? And then, if you're familiar with Genesis, you know that there was a warning. God said, don't eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But later on, at the end of Hebrews chapter 5, it says that we have our senses exercised to discern good and evil. So it wasn't a permanent condition that we should be lacking knowledge of good and evil. We see it around us all the time. But how do you differentiate? By what standard can we say this is right and this is where society should go and this is wrong and this is something we should stay away from? How does a culture come up with that standard? And so it is knowledge that is a huge part of it, and it's a knowledge from the throne room all the way down to earth.
So can we say praying gives knowledge?
Pain can become is a very useful. A lot of people learn from pain. Unfortunately, that's part of the human condition. The expression, it takes a 2x4 upside the head to wake us up on occasion.
Did you say pray or pain?
I said praying.
Praying does. Yes, yeah, so I thought you said pain.
No,
but
praying, yes. It helps us to develop a plan.
Yes. Yes.
And in a time when I think all of us may feel more chaos and confusion going on around us, this is so nice to get solid and to be reminded about these things.
But yes.
The truth.
There is truth, and truth by definition is one. It's not a series of opinions. It is one thing. History is one thing. We got from the beginning to here on a path. We didn't get here in a multitude of paths. We got here one way. History is one thing. It happened one way. And perceptions of what that was may cloud the issue and make it more difficult to get to what that was, which is what we're going to be talking about. How do you begin to break down and see where to look to find out what's going on? So, and I gave you this handout is everything I'm going to be talking about, because it's different. It's sometimes kind of complicated. And we'll get to the end of this and you think, oh, my brain needs a rest. That's okay. Good. We're moving in the right direction. It's just like going to the gym the first few times. It can be. So this is going to be different. So, and the tree of knowledge here starts out that how knowledge flows from the deepest recesses, which is where P for presuppositions. That's what that's the most deepest beliefs that we have about things. It leads from there up into ethics and values, which is behavior. So it starts from the deepest places of our thinking all the way out to how you live your life. Metaphysics is what we think is real. What is real? What is possible and what is impossible? Those are a reflection of your presuppositions. Some people think miracles are impossible. Doesn't happen, can't happen, never will happen. Anybody that says they saw one doesn't know what they saw. And talk about that a little. Epistemology is knowledge. How do we know what we know? And ethics and values is how should we live life? And it all starts down here. The little circle around the P is called self-attesting. That if you follow, we've got the toddler test. If you follow a line of reasoning back, it's going to end up being circular. Because, well, why? Well, because I said so. Why? Well, because your life will be better. Why? Why? You get down into this place where you just end up in a circle. There's no way to... Presuppositions are not proved naturalistically. You can't scientifically evaluate them. But there are evidences, which is the bigger circle. If you believe something at the core root beliefs, and there's no evidence for it, then either the analysis is wrong or maybe you need to abandon those beliefs. Truth has evidence. It is verifiable. That's one of the things that has happened in philosophy over the past 500 years is, well, you know, you really can't know for sure. And that's just not... People who were ignorant of the truth were the ones making those claims. But they've been refuted all the way through history, but they keep coming back up. Well, you just never know. But you can know. That's part of the point of all this. Rob people of what they even can think might be available instead of pursuing what is available to think about stuff and then have a way to evaluate what's true, what's worth hanging on to. And so the presuppositions always end up, every thought system on the face of the earth has presupposition. This is also the faith level. And we're talking about that. Because if you can't prove it in any way, there is evidence, but it can't be proved. And that's one of the things. Distinctions is that evidence is not proof. It can lead to convincing. It can become convincing, but it's still not proof. And most of the stuff that passes for evidence, and kind of in reality, when we get to the apologetic methods later on, not today, but that everything is evidence in some form. But mostly what gets used is scientific evidence and historical evidence. Those, and I'm going to talk about what is science today, because it's become really confused. Well, we just follow the science. Even though the data contradicts what you're saying, we're still, the claim is they're following science. And that's just not always true.
And it's the built-in bias that is in the P?
In the P. That's where it comes from. Presuppositions. That is the master regulator of thinking. See, well, no system is perfect. Gaping holes can point to incomplete analysis or error. Evidences are always secondary. Always. They either confirm what you already believe. Scientists are going to go in to a laboratory and date a rock. He already has an idea what the date of that rock should be. And when they do the tests, they're looking for a date that sort of agrees with what they already think it is. And that's part of... That can be a problem.
And they miscalculated all the material around that rock. They miscalculated that.
Yes.
And thinking it's a different age than it really is.
But this is where they started from. No, this rock can't possibly be 5,000 years. We think it's 100 million. So... when the tests keep pointing to 5,000, no, that's an error. And that comes out of the presuppositions. So, if we believe something and there are no external evidences, then we might need to rethink those beliefs. And all of this takes place before we start to consider ultimate reality or metaphysics. And for most people, this happens unconsciously, being mostly inherited from the environment and experience. We were raised. And it just, the environment gives, helps us frame a way of thinking that may or may not be, may or may not get us to the truth. So this is kind of the overall big picture. So we start with presuppositions that are self-attesting. There is a secondary circle of evidences that either reinforce that or say maybe something's wrong with that initial, that starting point. And then from there, what we think is real, how do we know what we know, and how should we live life? Ultimately, behavior is kind of has a long trail behind it, ahead of it. So where does a lot of these ideas come from? And this is the world views. And there's two most fundamental kinds of world views. One is called monism. All of reality is one thing. And dualism, all of reality is two things. Really basic. So in all of reality is one thing. The, on one side, there's spiritual. All of reality is spiritual. And the most dominant is religion in that sphere is Hinduism. And all the problems that mankind suffer is because we still think there's distinctions. It's called Maya. You still think there's a difference between you and that chair and that table and that marker instead of understanding all of reality is one thing. It's spiritual. And as you go through the cycles of life and death and reincarnation, coming back to purify your thinking to the point where you finally understand all of reality is one thing, then you get to become like a drop of water spliced into the bottomless and shoreless ocean of consciousness, of being. And you disappear. You're just another drop of water in that vast ocean of being. And so it completely strips you of your identity and individuality. And that is the goal in this New Age. Buddhism is a Hindu derivative. A lot of the Eastern religions derive from this, so there's some similarities that carry over. Especially the idea of reincarnation and karma and even yoga. Other stuff has been brought into the West under different identities, but it is Hindu in its root. The other, almost the exact opposite of everything, all of reality is spiritual, is all of reality is material. And you have to get the word materialist. A materialist is atheistic. There is no God. All that exists is laws of chemistry and physics. That's on one. The ancient Greeks had this idea that they were called atomists. That all of reality was an infinite number of tiny particles they called atoms. But that's nowhere close to what we understand as atoms. Today, they're completely different. It's more like string theory or something. The infinite number of strings all interacting, and that's what gives form to the various shapes. That comes up later in Plato. But all, today, materialistic or even a little more specialized form called naturalism, all of reality is nature, natural. There is no, in fact, they use this nature's box. That's the material universe from the tiny subatomic particles out the intergalactic space and all the laws and everything. That all goes in that box. And a materialist says there is nothing outside the box. That's all there is. We live in there, and they're in no more. It's, and I'll get a little more into that. So, and those kind of break down, and this is how philosophers have looked at how people live. How do people respond to all of everything is just material? And one of them has to do with is deterministic. If all that exists is chemistry and physics, and the interactions of forces and atoms and all of that stuff, then where does free will come in? Well, there is no free will in that universe. You are 100% womb to tomb, pre-programmed chemically to behave, act, speak, think a certain way. That's a really prominent, Stephen Hawking was one of the last, very prominent, they changed the word to physicalist. He called himself a physicalist. All that exists is a physical universe. And I wrote a book, and if you picked that book up and bought it, it's because you were biochemically predetermined to pick up that book and read it. And even the conclusions and knowledge you might gain out of that is all pre-programmed. There is no free will. And that has had some impact in the justice system. That's part of where it's not really your fault that you murdered that guy. Mm-hmm. It's society or the environment or it's just how you're pre-programmed. You were pre-programmed to walk through that door and come in here and sit down. It's really a deadly. A lot of prominent people believe it. And I say, so any mind, any real thinking, what we traditionally called thinking, is just an illusion. Consciousness is an illusion. And it has some serious consequences for people. If there's, it means nothing. There is no God. There is no supernatural. There's no life after death. There's no ultimate foundation for ethics. So it all is just relative. What we can get 51% people to agree on. Kind of weird because if they would have had to choose those ethics or not. There's no ultimate meaning in life and there's no human free will. This all came from a guy, I'll think of it, but he was in stage 4 brain cancer and he's spouting this stuff. And now he knows he's wrong.